Welcome to another episode of Becoming a Techno Wizard. It is Tuesday, June 21st, 8:20 a.m., 2022. getting that voice down a little bit. So, I'm going to try to keep this down to 30 minutes or less. And I don't mean this to be a Lex Fridman response podcast, but Lex Fridman has been having some banger interviews lately, back to back. So he just interviewed every time I had it in my mind and then promptly forgot it. He just interviewed a professor of economic Marxism, whatever. Basically a professor of economics who specializes with Marxism. And it was extremely interesting, right? So, as you may know, I'm more of a, I like to call myself an anarchist. Richard Wolff, there we go. His name is Richard Wolff that he interviewed. So, yeah, I'm more of an anarchist myself. I haven't really read much or anything about Marx. I've just heard about him. Like, you can't not hear about him on the internet nowadays. But I always found it very interesting. The reason I kind of steer clear myself is because he's kind of tied more into communism. And even though I personally actually don't have a whole lot of problems with communism, like, I don't really buy into the whole, you know, propaganda that communism is what Russia and China is all about. Like, because they just used the name communism because it was popular at one time. And they just kind of stuck with it. And you know this because if you actually know anything about communism, what China and Russia is doing doesn't really make sense. But nonetheless, when I used to study into communism, like, I used to look into research all the systems, and I was trying to compare capitalism versus communism versus this versus that, started to realize, oh, this is a much deeper problem. It's very, very complex, you know, kind of issue here, right? But what kind of threw me off communism personally is the fact that most implementations of it does tend to use some sort of statism, some sort of, you know, centralization of power, which is always a bad thing. And that's kind of what drew me more and more towards the anarchism side. I honestly was almost an ANCAP, you know, anarchist capitalism. But then I started to realize that even if you did have some sort of free market, right, in which the ANCAPs and most capitalists like love to praise and worship, even if you did have some sort of free market, it would be extremely amoral, right? It would be very cold. It would be far worse than what we have today, because the market, right, does not respond to people who cannot participate in the market. This is a key problem that, for some reason, no capitalist ever really, you know, admits or speaks to, right? The fact that poor people and impoverished people literally do not have a say in the market. They cannot vote because they have no dollars for which to buy products. So if a product or service is, you know, completely destroying, you know, an already marginalized or impoverished community like the ones I've grown up in, the market cannot fix it. The market does not have anything it can add to that, right? Unless some capitalist takes it in their heart to say, oh, I'm going to help these impoverished people. But really, they're probably just going to find a way to profit off of them. Which may or may not actually bring those people into the market, but even if they do, they still won't have much of a voice because they won't have much dollars to buy with. All right. Anyways, I went off track a little bit, but this is one of the key reasons I stepped away from the ANCAP side and went more and more towards anarchism, because the reality and even the theory of free markets don't really make sense. At least not for, you know, a better humanity in which we actually care for one another beyond, you know, what people can pay for. But anyways, yes. So Richard Wolff, on his Lex Friedman podcast, Richard Wolff goes into Marxism. Right, I knew Marxism was tied to communism, but that's it. I didn't really know a whole lot more about Marx. So it was really enlightening to hear, you know, Richard Wolff talk about them. And I'm honestly interested in reading more about Marx to see. So here's some of my Cliff's notes of what I remember him talking about. To my understanding, apparently Marx was more of a critic of capitalism than anything else. Pretty much all of his works for most of his life was just critiquing capitalism, right? And you have to understand that he lived in the 1800s, right? From the early 1800s and died in like 1890 or so. So he lived through like some of the worst parts of capitalism, right? The parts where they were coming from slavery into industrialization, right? Where you had the beginnings of sharecroppers, you had the industrial factory towns, you had, you know, all this stuff going on in Europe and in America, and other places in the world, of course, as well. But he was, of course, from Europe. And in Europe, you see a huge amount of these issues where it's really, like, London was already dirty, right? London was always a dirty place, but it was even dirtier during this time. Now, Marx is, I think, German or something? I'm not sure exactly what was going on in Germany at that time. But nonetheless, it was bad. Child labor, you know, slave labor, all this stuff, right? This is what they were doing back then. It was disgusting. So, of course, he was criticizing capitalism for all the stuff that it causes. And he was an academic, right? He was bred and pretty much, you know, raised in the library, you know, reading all these books, looking at all this history, you know, able to see all this stuff. And my kind of guy, he was apparently a student of Hegel, right? Because remember, Hegel lived around this time. I think he published his Phenomenology in the 1805 or something like that. So pretty early on, like just a few years before Marx was born. And Marx really enjoyed Hegel's work. He constantly tried to use the dialectic in order to get a good understanding of capitalism, and that's what he did apparently in his writings, where he would essentially steel man capitalism, right? Say, okay, this is what capitalism says it's going to do, this is what capitalism says it's trying to do, whatever it's accomplishing. But when we look at the other side, this is what it's not doing, this is how it falls short. So he's not just taking pot shots at capitalism, he's not just making it easy on himself, he actually builds it up and shows how none of that, you know, works. So some of the standout things I remember from this interview so far, and I actually might listen to this interview again. It was just so good. And Richard Wolff is a very entertaining kind of guy, the way he explains things. I gotta look up his other stuff. But some things he pointed out is that when Marx was critiquing capitalism, right, he points out that the underlying idea, right, of capitalizing on things like... People have always said, you know, capitalism is great for innovation and this, that, and the other. But the problem therein is that doesn't always, you know, trickle out. That doesn't always affect the average person, right? This was much later in the interview. I'm trying to remember some of the earlier stuff he said. I really should write notes for these dang podcasts. Or try to somehow. So he was talking about how capitalism, he looked at capitalism from a perspective of like a mathematician, right? If you just look at the math of capitalism, it makes sense why capitalism is inherently exploitative as opposed to, you know, helpful for everybody, right? He broke it down as such. Let's say you have, you know, $100 worth of equipment and tools and things like that for your business. Like a capitalist is starting a business. He has about $100 worth of equipment, tools, technology, whatever. And another $100 worth of employees, worth of workers, right? Makes a product, buys and sells it, makes $20 profit, right? Really, to be honest with you, they probably try to aim for $50 or $100 worth of profit, or even more. But nonetheless, let's say they make $20 worth of profit, right? And then through some sort of technological development, they were able to figure out a technology that would enable them to double their productivity. So now they only actually need like they can make twice the money with less people if they use this technology. So they would fire it's just no brainer to fire at least half of them, right? And then, you know, replace them with this technology. But those new profits, right, don't go towards the other 50 people. They go towards the capitalists, right? Because they just made more money. There's more in their pockets. And this is like the fundamental problem of capitalism, right? It incentivizes greed. It incentivizes this behavior of not caring about the everyday person, your workers or whatever, and caring more about the profit, which of course goes towards the capitalists, the shareholders, things like that. Now, Lex, and I always knew this about Lex, he's a very pro-capitalist type of person. He came from Russia during the Soviet Union times, kind of sees America, he kind of believes in the whole American dream crap. And it's understandable why, because that's what worked for his family. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, confusingly, the data shows that the American dream is more true for many immigrants than it is for actual Americans, which is a very, very strange thing. Some people say it's the work, right? The work ethic of immigrants. But honestly, as a person who's been raised, and well, granted, my grandparents are immigrants, so I don't know if I count as much. But I don't know. I've seen plenty of people who were born in America work plenty and never, you know, never get off, never get that moment. But anyways, Lex was saying, oh, this is the, you know, this is like the incentive for them to innovate, right? This is why capitalism can innovate, because it incentivizes capitalists to find those innovations in order to cut costs and things like that, right? Without that, then you wouldn't have as much innovation. But Richard Wolff was like, yeah, sometimes you do have to slow down the rate of innovation if you actually care about the people and their environment, right? This is one of the problems. It's like we think that innovation is the best thing at all costs, but if that costs you the entirety of humanity, or your humanity, or, you know, all these people's lives, their livelihoods, then what use is that innovation if the people who need it die? You know, like it's very problematic there, right? But nonetheless, that was my own take on it, like the fact that innovation doesn't always lead to success with a lot of people. Can lead to a lot more struggle. But nonetheless, Richard Wolff came back with saying, why didn't the workers get a voice here, right? Like, they're the ones doing the actual work, doing the actual production, doing the actual manufacturing, all this stuff, and yet they have no say in how the profit is divvied up, right? Especially in a nation such as America, which claims to be all about democracy, but these companies are extremely autocratic, right? They have most of the people that actually work at these companies have no say in how the company is developed, you know, where the profits go. Instead, it would be better if the workers can decide, you know, where that extra profit goes, of what they want to do with the technology. Because what the capitalists could have done, instead of just laying off or firing 50 people, is actually cutting the workday short to only half the day, but still pay them the same, right? And the workers would have more time for themselves. They can pursue their hobbies. They can themselves maybe innovate, right? Because studies have shown, well, he didn't say all this, but to my knowledge, studies have shown that when people have more free time on their hands, they have better mental health, they have better problem-solving skills, they have better productivity, they have better all this stuff, right? So in my mind, like, yeah, that makes so much sense to just let people work less with the same amount of pay, because that will actually increase your productivity Even though capitalists will think, you know, it decreases their productivity and they're paying people for no reason, right? But anyway, Richard Wolff was saying that, what time is it? Got to make sure. Okay. Yeah, Richard Wolff was saying that, these capitalists could have just, you know, cut the day in half, or if the workers, came together, they would decide, oh, maybe, you know, we don't need half the day off. Maybe we just need a third of extra time or free time or whatever, right? But let the workers decide that, all right? And that would be far better. But yeah, this is one of the conversations they had. I found really interesting. The fact that Marx looked at this from a mathematical standpoint, the fact that capitalism is inherently exploitative because it incentivizes capitalists to, you know, make more, to exploit in order to profit, right? To either fire workers, pay them less than they deserve, you know, find the cheapest workers, right? Immigrants and things like that. Outsource workers to other places where they can depend on slave labor or sweatshops and things like that. Like, this is what capitalism demands if you want to stay, quote unquote, competitive, right? And this is his point, right? Is that, and this is coming all the way from Marx, is that capitalism, and we knew this all the way since the 1800s, inherently incentivizes the worst kind of behaviors in humanity. Right, we keep on saying, oh, capitalism is the example of human nature. It's the best, kind of form of human nature. Right, it caters to what human nature is, but really, it's just an environment that enforces or incentivizes the worst aspects of human nature. Right, human nature is inherently social. That's it. Everything else is based on the environment. And if the environment incentivizes good behavior or bad behavior, that's where people will gravitate more towards, right? So if anything, and this is what Richard's kind of closing arguments, this is a 3-hour podcast, so there's way more stuff going on here. Let's go look it up yourself, but I'm just trying to pull out things I remember quickly. But some of his arguments to Lex is like, because Lex is a big person of human nature and talking about this stuff, about what humans truly are. Like, are we just greedy? Are we violent creatures? Are we this, that, we that? And Richard Wolff saying, you know, if you look at human history, you'll see that human nature is extremely adaptive to different environments and circumstances, right? These foraging cultures were very peaceful, or at least more peaceful than what we are today, more egalitarian and things like that. But in a capitalist system, it's like we are able to do everything we can do despite, you know, the environment. It's like people struggle. Like, it's rare for you to find a company that actually cares about its mission as opposed to the profit. It's rare, right? Like, you can have breakthrough people that are able to create companies in which, you know, foster good, you know, business sense or good business sense at the same time as treat their workers well and treat them like humans and this, that, and the other, right? But that's unfortunately rare, and they're almost never as competitive, as big as the, you know, as the ones that are not that nice. He mentioned several times that in different ways that, you know, essentially things like monopoly, right, or oligopolies is the product of competition. And I really love that, because that's something I've been, you know, kind of thinking about, like, as well. Like, how do you square the fact that today we have way more monopolies or oligopolies, whatever you want to call it, than we do, even though we have less regulation in many of these industries, right? And some don't get me wrong, some of these industries do have a lot of regulation, but we actually have less, if you look at the antitrust regulations and things like that, that has actually been decimated since it was, you know, 50 years ago, even 20 years ago, right? And because of that, we have more and more of these huge companies that are able to take over much of our lives, right? these regulations are and I'm sorry, these oligopolies and monopolies are a result of competition. This is what capitalists want, right? He pointed out, as an economist, you know, in business school, this is what they have to teach people. This is what the students learn about business, that business is about securing your place in the market, right? Gaining as much market share as possible, gaining as much profit as possible. So the end goal of competition for these capitalists is to become a monopoly, is to, you know, make it so that you can't have any of these other people, any of these other businesses overcoming you, right? This is the, so monopoly and things like that is a product of competition. So how can we say that in a free market that there will be no monopolies, right? Because Lex was saying, oh, you know, this breeds innovation, you know, as new people come through and they try to, you know, overpower the old folks, but, or the old companies. But Richard Wolff was pointing out, like, no, that just doesn't happen as much as you think it would, right? And we know this today, like, the fact that big companies buy out smaller ones as soon as they see anything that might be competitive, that might, you know, impinge on their market share, they begin to buy them up, loot them out. Like, we know, what's the term? Acquire, hire, or fire. I don't know. That's not how you say it. But there's, like, a thing that companies like Facebook and Google do where they either acquire it, they either buy out all the competitors to make them better, or they just destroy the company. They exploit the hell out of their supply chain and all this other stuff to make it impossible for that company to function anymore. And I find that very, very apropos right there. And then, in addition, there was another great point they was talking about how Richard Wolff was saying how he sees government and corporations as essentially twins, right? People keep arguing, people keep saying, oh, it's the government's fault, it's the government's fault. But in reality, it's these corporations that work hand in hand with the government, right? Like, government needs corporations and corporations need government, right? Well, people, I don't know why people don't realize this, but people just, okay, sorry. Yeah, the regulations that we have in mind, right, are precisely due to these corporations, all right? Like, the many of these regulations that get put in place are due to the lobbyists who work at these government facilities or, you know, with these government organizations and say, oh, we want this in place, all right? And I'm going to fund your PAC or whatever. And people call that crony capitalism or, you know, corruption or anything, but really that's just the system at work, all right? The system is what the system does. And this is what really bothers me about a lot of capitalist idealists, to say, oh, capitalist, that's, you know, in the ideal world, like, without that, like, that's just crony capitalism. That's not real capitalism. Like, that's how capitalism works right now. So that is what capitalism does, right? Like, you literally have what you're talking about. The free market is at work, but it's not just because it's the free market. That means even the government regulations are on the market. Like, even people can be bought. Even, you know, laws can be bought. That is the free market at work. And that's different than what you would say for, like, communists like China or you know, Russia being communist or socialist, because literally the definition of communist is supposed to be the people, right, deciding what to do, like the workers at a organization, at a company, whatever, deciding where the profit goes. In China and Russia, the people do not decide. There's a ruling class, a proletariat, that decides, you know, what happens to what. This central planning is not the same as, you know, if workers themselves decided between themselves what happens with the profit or what they want to do in their community or this, that, and the other. So it's literally a different thing, as opposed to here in America and many of these capitalist nations, where you literally have, you know, a free market, but it just so happens that the laws and people are on that market as well, right? So you can literally capitalize, just like what capitalism defines, you can capitalize on things like IP, right? On laws, on regulations, on land, and on people, right? It just so happens that people, we started to outlaw buying people. Therefore, you know, no slavery. Even though you still do have slavery in prisons and in the quote-unquote third world countries, you know, undeveloped nations. And they just call it, what do you call it, like lifting up these nations. But really, you're just exploiting them and using them for slave labor. Like, it's ridiculous. But anyways, yeah, Richard Wolff had a lot of great points here. He was also pointing out how, you know, Marxism, like, nobody knows what Marxism is in America because Marxism is not taught, right? He's been in every, pretty much almost all of these Ivy League schools for the last 20, 25 years or so like that, or probably even longer. And pretty much none of his professors would teach him about Marxism. Only one, you know, said, oh, look into this, look into that. Most of them were too scared or just completely dismissive of Marxism. So it's no wonder that most people have no idea what Marxism actually is. They just say, oh, this thing, that's Marxist. Oh, that's Marxist. It's just, it's like Cold War. It's like we're still in the Cold War. And that's really unfortunate because he was saying that actually Marxism would be very powerful and very useful for America right now, right? He was pointing out how things like individualism would actually be benefited from Marxist ideologies, because in a current capitalist space, you know, we claim we are individualists and that people can be their own person and this, that, and the other. But in actuality, you depend on the market. You completely depend on corporations for your wage. You depend on, you know, whatever is affordable in your area in order for you to do anything. You depend on being able to afford healthcare, for God's sake. Like, it's ridiculous. But in a Marxist kind of space where you actually critique the system and you say, okay, this is not working, let's see what we can do instead, all right? Let's see what we can do instead. And then you can, you know, do things like workers' union. And he pointed out that workers' union is probably like one of the best examples of Marxism. And it's done in many places around the world. Even in the U.S. we have some workers' unions. There's some interesting game companies, for instance, that are workers' unions. There's a couple other places. And unfortunately, it's extremely rare in the U.S. because unions are almost illegal, even though it's not supposed to be, and you're not supposed to, you know, stop unionization and all this. But of course, you literally see in the news every day, Amazon is doing this against unions. Starbucks is doing this against you. It's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, right? But yeah, I'll end it here. Some other interesting, you know, things I remember now is that they were talking about why Marxism, or why communism, Stalinism, Maoism, all this other stuff came from quote unquote Marxism. He pointed out a very interesting thing here is that, again, Marxism was primarily about just critiquing capitalism. He never really went into what you should do after capitalism, right? Because he was, in his time, the bigger question was whether or not we can even question capitalism. People kept saying capitalism is the best thing we can ever do and all this other stuff. So he spent his life trying to critique it. But it was afterwards, folks like Lenin, who were actually able to, you know, do something about it, right? And that's where, you know, the Russian Revolution came in and all this other stuff. The problem, though, is that with these revolutions, they started to actually pose a question, okay, how do you overcome capitalism and things like that, right? You started to have two main camps here, with Leninism side saying through revolution, where you take over the government and do all this other stuff, and the other side, which is through reformation. Now, in America, reformation was actually more successful, right? Because that's how we got, you know, the actual regulations that we did get. That's how we got rid of child slavery, of child labor. That's how we got minimum wage. That's how we got Social Security, all these other things, right? It's through these Reformation, Marxist, socialist ideas. And for a long time, in the latter half of the 1800s and then into the 1900s, socialism and communism were extremely popular, right? These workers' movements were extremely popular. No wonder why, because they were being consistently, you know, decimated in these factories and industrial complexes and things like that. It was so bad. Once I've talked about this a little bit before, but remember, it wasn't until what, 1865, that slavery was quote unquote outlawed in America. I say quote unquote because actually it was still a little bit of slavery later on, actual slavery, not just sharecroppers, on into the 1900s. But nonetheless, in the 1800s, people began, like the people who were for the abolition of slavery against black people actually started caring more about the white white wage workers. They call it this is where we got the term the wage slavery. It's because those abolitionists who were initially like, okay, black people, some like, it's wrong for these people to be enslaved. But then, you know, these capitalists started creating all these industries in the northern regions and things like that. And they started to see how bad it was. And it was like, oh, we have, you know, slavery with white people going on here. And initially, you had a union, you had a talks about these different efforts being combined, being unionized, right? Becoming one. It's like the abolition of black slavery, actual slavery, and the abolition of quote unquote wage slavery with the white folks. But of course, because people started caring more about the white people, and you know, people saw the black people as enemies. Because when the when the black people freed themselves, like when they ran away from being enslaved in the South and ran up to, you know, the whole Underground Railroad thing, ran up to the North to find some work and find a life and all this other stuff, they would work for less money than the white people. Because of course, before they were being paid nothing, and so they would work for way less than the white people that were there. And the capitalists capitalized on that. They're like, oh yeah, these people will work for less, let's use them instead. And so the white people were like, oh, they started to get bitter and mad at the black people at the black people for working less, right? It was like, oh, these people, they would just come in, they take all the jobs and all that other stuff. And so the abolition movement actually changed towards these white people and almost ignored the plight of the black slaves in the South. So once again, when they say the Civil War wasn't really fought for slavery, this is what they mean. It was fought more so because the South, with all those slaves in the Three-Fifths Compromise, was saying all these slaves count as three-fifths of a person, right? So with all, if I have so many slaves, right, I have more votes, even though not, you know, none of these get their own vote. All of those votes get counted in the slave owner. And so the slave owner now counts as like a, you know, several dozen votes or hundreds of votes or whatever, because they own all these slaves, right? And that means the South would have more power in the Congress in order to pass more laws and this, that, and the other. And they would spread this, you know, slave, you know, the slavery throughout the U.S. And the North was like, okay, we can't do that. Right, because that would give them too much power. This is what they mean when they say, you know, Civil War wasn't really fought about slavery. It was technically fought about slavery, but more so about the power involved. The fact that these slave owners would literally have more power, more voting power in their quote unquote democracy. All right, I say democracy like that because remember, the only people who could vote were landowners. Poor people could not vote. Women could not vote. Black people could not vote. So what do you, you know, if you want to call that a democracy, whatever. But nonetheless, these people would have more power because they owned all these slaves. And that's why they fought. Right? Anyways, during this time, all these wage workers who were, you know, very much, you know, exploited in these factories and things like that, were getting super angry because it's a terrible life. You know, their kids having to work, you know, the men having to work, the women being stuck at home, having no rights, this, that, and the other. Like, it's terrible, right? Probably one of the worst times in human history. So, of course, you started to have all these rebellions and revolutions and protests and all this other stuff going on in the U.S., in Europe, all around the world, right? People are just angry. Right, so this is why in the 1800s, in the early 1900s, there was so much unrest going on. There was so much you know, panning for change. Like, people wanted something different. And so when Marx came along and saying, hey, capitalism is not so good, you know, maybe we should be doing this instead. Maybe we should be giving more power to the workers, right? Maybe we should be doing this, that, and the other. And people glommed onto that. This is why Marx is one of the most, or probably the most, according to Richard Wolff, the most popular kind of revolutionary or, you know, different ideology. It spreads so quickly because of the unrest, because of the environment, right? It was like lighting a match in a tinder, whatever they call it, right? That was saying people were ready for it, and so it spread, and it's still so popular because there's still so much problems with capitalism. If capitalism was great, then Marxism wouldn't be popular. Nobody would be talking about it. But people still care about this stuff. People are still, you know, exploited. So it's no wonder that you know, this idea is so popular. But anyways, yeah, this is why, you know, folks like Lenin and the Bolsheviks in Russia were able to quickly, you know, do all the things that they did. The problem after that was not necessarily Marx, because again, he was just critiquing capitalism, was that Lenin and Stalin and all these folks there started to realize that, hey, now I have the power, you know, what do we do now? And Marx didn't really think that far, I don't think. Maybe I misread, understand, but essentially, from what I understood, Marx didn't really talk about, you know, revolution. He didn't really, you know, go that far into it. Again, because the most important problems at the time was whether or not you can even, you know, criticize capitalism in the first place. All right. I think in the later of his life, he started to have some stuff there, but they didn't get that too much in there. So I'm not really sure. But nonetheless, at that point, even when, you know, during later Marx's life later on, there were other people that were way more popular that started to become more popular, right? That started to say, oh, revolution, oh, let's take over the state, oh, let's do this, let's do that, right? So really, you should be pointing at all these other, you know, examples here. And another thing that I need to end this here, but this is just some great points. Go check it out yourself, right? If you're curious at all about Marxism or capitalism, or, you know, just history in general, I think it's really fantastic, and it's a great, good way of understanding, you know, where we are today. Because he was pointing out how it's very, very worrying that today we start to see things like Trump happen, and things like, you know, fascism cropping up, and things like authoritarianism cropping up, where a lot of people, especially the right wing, are going more and more towards these authorities and things like that, and taking away women's rights, and taking away, you know, all these rights, even though the right is supposed to be against big government, but they're literally giving government more and more power. Why? It's because, similar to, you know, those initial revolutions, like the Russian revolutions and things like that, the government is trying to hold on, right? It's trying to hold on to this power that they're losing, right? And through that, you get things like fascists, you get things like people coming in and saying, oh, I'm going to change things, or I'm going to fix things to how they were before, I'm going to bring us back to the good old days, right? And because of that, you start to let people like, you know, Hitler come through. And he pointed out how Hitler, even though they used socialism as a central idea, as their idea for their party, like they called the party the National Socialists of Germany or whatever, they weren't actually socialists, right? And they certainly weren't communists. They actually tried to kill the communists first. Like, before any of the Jews, they actually went after the communists. They were killing these people in the streets if you said you were a communist. Because, again, remember, communist is about the people. You can't have... It's supposed to be stateless. If you have a state and you call it communist, it's not communism by definition, right? So they were killing communists in the street. They took the name of socialism and said, oh, because this is so popular, we're just going to call ourselves socialists. And this is why people were crowding towards the Nazi, you know, party. People don't remember Nazi and Hitler were extremely popular. They weren't like tyrants initially, right? They weren't some small little militia and started killing. No, they were super popular. Why? This is why. Because there was so much unrest with these factories and this capitalism in place that people wanted to do anything in order to change. And so when some person said, oh, we're going to, you know, care about your needs, we're going to think about you, all right? People saying, oh, yes, let's follow this dude. He knows what he's talking about. Yeah, let's do the change. And, of course, that ended up being Hitler. And so it's very worrying where you see the same thing happening here in America, all right? Now, I don't really believe that Trump is this person. People kept saying, oh, Trump is the new Hitler because he's doing these things. Yes, there are some similarities there, but people don't understand that Trump, I really don't think Trump was as smart as Hitler was. I'm sorry. Because, remember, Hitler was extremely charismatic, and yes, Trump does have some charisma, but it's not the same type of thing there, right? I didn't look into Hitler too much. I don't really know, you know, exactly what he's done, but it seemed that he was smarter than Trump, because Trump has failed everything he's done throughout his entire life, and he's pretty much, you know, floating on his grandparents', you know, success. Like, he's and you see that with a lot of these, you know, silver spoon rich folks, is that they can float along even with all, they can make tons of mistakes, but they can still float along on their name alone, right? And that has been true for almost every empire throughout human history, right? It's like the sons and the grandsons and daughters and all this other stuff can float along on the name of their ancestors for a good couple decades, if not centuries, right? Depending on how fast communication was happening. So yeah, I don't think Trump is the next Hitler, but I do think there is probably going to be something that comes up. It's probably going to be somebody that comes along that has that sort of, you know, intelligence, cold calculating intelligence and charisma and all this other stuff. And people are going to be like, yes, that's who we're going to follow. And that's extremely worrying. That's extremely worrying. But yeah, there was a whole lot of stuff being said in this podcast. It was a bit of a debate, because again, Lex is more of a capitalist type of person. So he was, you know, what about this? And saying, oh, you know, but I'm push back on this. And even though I got a little frustrated, because Lex was saying the same, tired, you know, kind of almost dumb questions that is just straight capitalist propaganda and doesn't actually pan out in reality. But nonetheless, it was great to hear that, because unfortunately, there's a lot of people who do ask these questions or who do think this way. And so it was good to hear Richard Wolff's, you know, comebacks and responses to that. And it was surprising that many of the comments were actually supportive of this entire thing. And it's that's another thing that's kind of worrying in a good way, though, because the fact that people can actually consider things like Marx nowadays means that people are really realizing that there's something that needs to change, right? And the fact that you can have these conversations on something like Lex Fridman's podcast, who again is pro-capitalist, mm-hmm. means that his audience is pretty open to these ideas. And that should worry these mm-hmm. capitalists. but at least these people are, you know, more mm-hmm. more open to actual communication and not just straight, you know, mm-hmm. violence or whatever. But anyways, okay, I'm in it for real. I really have to go. But that's it for now. Learned a lot. It was really fantastic. And as always, thanks for listening. Let me know your thoughts. If you disagree or disagree, let's have a conversation, have a dialectic. And yeah, thanks for listening, and have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.